Hey guys, and welcome to Money Talks News, the podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk about how to figure out your personal retirement number. According to the latest report from Vanguard, the average 45-year-old has less than $180,000 saved for retirement. Now, that may sound like a lot, but the cost of healthcare alone is expected to exceed that later in life. So, how much is enough? $500,000? $1 million? $2 million? And there it is, the big question. Exactly how are you supposed to know how much you're going to need to win your retirement? How can you figure out if enough is enough? Well, this week, we have a guest who's going to help us find our retirement number and then help us figure out how to reach that number. I'm Stacy Johnson. As usual, my co-host will be financial journalist Miranda Marquardt. Hello, Miranda.
Hi, Stacy. I never plan to retire, but
apparently I don't either.
And our producer is also with us today, Aaron Freeman. Hey, Aaron.
Oh, I wonder what my number is.
We're going to find
probably
out.
Probably 82.
This week, we have a special guest, Chris. And Chris, I should have asked how to pronounce your last name. What is it?
Mamula.
Mamula. Chris Mamula. He's one of the partners at Can I Retire Yet? An appropriately named website. CanIRetireYet.com, right, Chris?
That is correct.
Very cool. Now, Chris retired at 41 by figuring out his retirement number and working toward financial freedom. He's going to share his process and the steps you could take to retire earlier than you thought you could. Before we start, remember, we don't give financial advice, so make sure you do your own research and consult your own experts before acting on anything you learn here. Okay, let's dive in. Chris, you retired at 41. How the heck did you do that?
I guess the short answer is kind of by accident at first for about a decade and then very intentionally. And what I mean by that is my wife and I both were from backgrounds where we just didn't grow up with a ton of money. And then we met each other in college. So we kind of were dating and getting to know one another when we didn't have much money. And so when we started actually making two salaries, we were kind of content and we upped our lifestyle a little bit, but we just always saved one salary and lived off the other with no idea that you could retire at 40. That wasn't a goal, wasn't a plan, but it was just kind of comforting for us to have that security. And then about a decade later, we found this FIRE, Financial Independence Retire Early movement. And it was a lot of people kind of doing similar things to what we were doing, but they kind of had a better handle on the technical side, the investing and the tax planning. So we got very intentional for that last 5 years of my career. And yeah, at 41, I left my career as a physical therapist and really haven't looked back.
I have so many questions for you. First, let me make an observation.
Sure.
This the FIRE movement, Financial Independence Retire Early, that's what it stands for, right?
Correct.
I see this constantly. Not as much now. I mean, a year or so ago, it was a huge thing. It's all over the place. And every one of these people who's retired is not retired. They have a website. You have a website. I have a website. I don't call myself retired. Why are you retired?
Well, if I could kind of correct you, I have a website and I wrote a book and I have now taken a part-time job. So you're absolutely correct. And I think that people go down this path because I think we all have this image of what retirement is. And retirement is this time when you stop working. Retirement is this time when you live off only your investments. And that's just what people accept and we don't ask enough questions. And I was guilty of that myself. And then when you kind of start getting close, you realize a couple of things. One is you get to this point of being able to retire early by being a really good saver. And I think you're become a really good saver because, again, it's that comfort, that feeling of security that a lot of us get. And so that goes away when you kind of take a traditional retirement. And also, you know, at 41, like, what am I going to do with my life I don't have any meaningful, purposeful work? So what I think a lot of us kind of come to the conclusion is that that stopping work completely and retiring in that traditional sense of the word isn't the right goal. But I hope that, you know, as FIRE grows and evolves, that message is becoming more clear and we're getting that out there better. But yeah, I started with the idea of retiring and we saved enough that I think I could retire, but we really haven't put that to the test, to be quite honest.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have my own acronym and it's called FIRN, F-I-R-N, Financial Independence, Retire Never. Because, you know, to me, the goal in life is to find something you love doing. I'm 67 years old. I have no intention of retiring because I like what I'm doing. And that shouldn't that really be the goal, to find something that you really enjoy?
Yeah, I would only just push back a little bit against that and just say that, you know, a lot of times those things don't pay a lot of money. And so I think, like, if you can establish this level of some degree of financial independence, whether you can fully retire and live off your investments, or even if you have, you know, a few years and as you get up to maybe a decade of savings, and like we tend to in the FIRE community define financial independence as having like 25 years of your annual spending. And then, and even beyond that, you can have kind of more cushion. And the more you have, the more comfortable you can live. But even just having a few years of savings built up, it provides you a lot of freedom to start taking more risks, and or maybe that's not even a good way to say it, but to take different paths that might seem risky. And if you didn't have any savings, would be risky. But you kind of just never know where things are going to lead you. But people get trapped because they don't have any cushion in their spending and with their money.
That makes sense.
Well, I'm glad to finally have a person in the FIRE movement that I could put on the hot seat. Get it? FIRE hot seat. Now, let me ask you this question too. Okay, so you're like, you and your wife, you're like 20 years old or 25, whatever you were, right? When you decided you wanted to aim at this goal to be able to retire at 40. Is that?
Well, again, I would say, I mean, we were 25-ish when we were getting out of, like, I got a physical therapy degree, so 7 years, about 25. So we were 25 when we started our careers, but there was no FIRE movement. I mean, heck, I'm old enough. I got a gray beard and like the internet wasn't even that big of a thing and blogs. So none of that existed. So we just kind of stumbled for like a decade, just saving a lot of money because, again, it felt good. And then it was really only about 5 years when we got very intentional before I left my job.
So what was your retirement number? How much money did you have that enabled you to retire at age 41?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that number for each of us, it really depends on how much you spend and what you want your lifestyle to look like. So I think a lot of people, me included, up until, again, we found the FIRE movement and got more intentional, we really don't have an idea of what we're spending. And like, even for us, as much as we were saving and as, I guess, kind of good as we were with saving, we didn't really know what we were spending on or how much. We just knew, basically, I was banking a check. So we knew we were living off of less than that. It's like, basically, we could live off my wife's salary and we were banking mine. But we never really looked at where our money was going. And so we never, you know, multiply that out to see what we would need, what our FIRE number would be.
But you retired at 41. So what I'm asking is, how much money had you saved by the age of 41?
Yeah. So we just kind of used that metric as a multiple. So it was, I kind of never get into really specifics with number because I think it kind of more turns people off than turns them on. Because for one person, a number would sound unrealistically frugal. And for another person, it seems maybe unrealistic that you would never hit it. But I mean, I would say, just for kind of credibility, I would say it's north of $1 million. And yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I would be surprised to be able to retire. But where I'm getting at, Chris, isn't to ask you personal questions, although that's exactly what I'm doing. It's to say, because you have to have a ton of money to retire at the age of 40. Because, you know, even $1 million, obviously it depends on how you live, you know, too. But
yeah, by today's standards, $1 million isn't enough to retire. According to a lot of articles.
Yeah, and we're going to get into this. You're right, though, Aaron. That's why I'm asking this specific question, because it seems like you'd have to have a ton of money to retire at the age of 40. I mean, you have to have a ton of money to retire at the age of 67.
Miranda. I was just going to say, I think the interesting thing about setting your own personal retirement number and what Chris was talking about, how something seemed really frugal to somebody and something seems unattainable to others, is like, we know people that set a number at like, $650,000, right? So Purple from A Purple Life, they set this goal and they retired then, but they have this income coming in from like their blog and from other sources. But that's when they quit their job, was when they hit this number that they thought, oh yeah, okay, this is the number I feel comfortable with. And I think that's the real key here, is being intentional and saying, okay, what's the number I feel comfortable with and what do I need to do to make that happen?
Yeah, and
well,
I would just kind of, yeah, I would kind of add to that. Like, again, it really depends on how, A, what lifestyle you want to live, and then B, how creative you can get creating that lifestyle. So for example, I consider myself a avid skier, which I think a lot of people look at, you know, if you go to a resort, it's $150 a day. If you need the newest skis every year, you're looking at well over $1,000 in equipment. But you know, for me, I'm going to buy the same pair of skis and ski them for 5 to 10 years. We live right next to a ski resort, so we spend very little traveling there. We buy a value pass for like $800 at the beginning of the year, and I probably ski 50 days a year. So I mean, if you break it down for me, it's a very frugal hobby. But I mean, like with anything, I think you could say that with golf, with anything, you know, if you, depending on how you do things, you know, you can make things as frugal or as expensive as you want to do. What I focus on is not having the nicest gear, not, you know, having to travel all these places, but like really designing our lifestyle like, so I can do as much as I want to do for as little money. You know, and we've designed a lifestyle that I think most people would not look at as frugal. We travel a lot, but we use credit card reward points. Like I said, we ski a lot, but we buy season passes and we live very close. Just things like that, that you can really design your lifestyle, and it doesn't have to cost a lot of money once you escape the lifestyle of like you're spending a ton of money commuting to work and spending a lot on cars and you buy the biggest house and things like that. If you don't value those things, you can live quite well for not a whole lot of money. So I'll push back on that a little bit.
You know, Chris, I wrote a book called Life or Debt, I think in 1999 or 20 years ago, essentially. And that at the end of that book, I said, you know, one of the main things you have to focus on in life is what you want to do with your life. And you can find ways of doing it. And the example that I gave, I'm a boater. I live in Fort Lauderdale on the water. And if you want to recreate your condo on the water, you will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more than a million, to do that. You can also learn how to build. I read a book about a guy who built his own sailboat. There's no refrigeration. There's no radio. But he and his wife sail around the world. So they quit when they were 25. What most people do is they go, one day I'm going to be so rich, I'm going to be able to buy this house on the water. You know, it's going to be it's super complicated, going to break all the time, blah, blah, blah. And what you end up doing is standing on the dock your whole life. So you can make choices, exactly what you just said. You know, you've got to, you're living the way you want to live, and you found a way to do it frugally.
Yeah, and I would even argue that, like, you can, I think we live better than a lot of people for a lot less money because, again, like, living in a ski town here, like, I can tell you I ski 50 to 60 days a year probably. I'd never ski on a Saturday because that's when everybody else is skiing. So, like, I'm there when there's no lift lines and the snow's not getting all chopped up because there's not a million people out there. So, again, like, and I go on the nicest days, and if it's not a nice day, I live here and I don't have to rush out or I don't have to be there trying to, you know, cram in 8 hours because I did spend 150 or 160 bucks for a lift ticket. So yeah, I mean, it's really a mindset shift as much as anything, as opposed to like needing a ton of money.
Well, now I have to ask you where you live. What ski resort do you? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I live in Ogden, Utah, and it's called Snow Basin Ski Resort. It's in my backyard, and it's world class skiing. It's like where the Olympic downhill was when it was in Salt Lake City.
Cool. I just wondered because I'm so tired of paying for expensive hotel rooms when I go skiing, and now I can crash at your place.
You're welcome. We have a little extra room here.
That's what I like to hear. Okay, now let's get into the topic we're here to talk about today, and that is what is getting to your retirement number.
Sure.
Let's make sure everybody understands what page we're on here. Chris, what is a retirement number?
Yeah, so I mean, I think, so my blog is called Can I Retire Yet? And I think for a lot of people, that what they're really trying to ask is how much money do I need to retire that I'm never going to run out of money? And so I think the starting point for that is kind of like we said, you need to know what you spend. It's a good thing to just track what you spend now and then kind of project out, like if you have kids, you know, how much of your money is going to them and will that come off the books? You know, where do you want to live? Are you going to move somewhere less expensive after you're done working? Or do you maybe like us, like we actually, I mean, my career was in Western Pennsylvania where the cost of living was quite low and I moved to a ski town. So my housing actually was more expensive. But then the lifestyle choices, it eliminated a lot of travel and like some of the things I talked about, like being able to do like season passes, it made my lifestyle cheaper. So you have to kind of look at all these factors and think, what are you going to spend? And then again, it's kind of coming back to that multiple of what do you need to support that spending?
This is such an impossible task for me. Before we continue, let me ask you, Aaron, and you, Miranda, do you guys have a retirement number? Do you have a retirement age in mind? You're both in your 40s, right?
Yeah, so I don't specifically plan for like a retirement number. For me, it's been more about creating, you know, a lifestyle I enjoy right now. And so that's what I've kind of done, which is nice. But at the same time, I am what is called Coast FI or Coast Financial Independence, which basically means that I have enough money. Well, I will be Coast FI when my son finishes his.
You're what? What is it called?
It's Coast FI. So Coast Financial Independence. So it basically means you can coast on.
Oh, okay.
So basically what it means is I have enough money in my my investment accounts and my retirement savings type thing where I don't actually have to put any more into my investments in order for them to grow at a rate that when I am 59, when I personally am 59 and a half, I can start taking money penalty free from those retirement accounts. So I will be coast fi in the next 1 to 2 years. And so, but for me, it's, yeah. So for me, it's like, okay, I don't particularly plan to retire. It's not something I'm aiming for, but I do want to make sure that I can be comfortable with whatever I choose to do and have, like what Chris was talking about earlier, different options to enjoy my life, to do what I want to do with my life, to, you know, continue losing elections and whatnot.
So I'm confused though. We're going to get to you in a second, Aaron, but let me ask, I'm confused because you just said you don't really have a retirement number, but you said within 1 or 2 years, you're going to be where you need to be. Isn't that a number?
Kind of. basically what it is that in 1 or 2 years, when I reach, like, I have enough investments in my accounts that when I reach age 59 and a half, if I wanted to not work at all, I could support the current lifestyle that I have.
But that's not a specific number to you.
No. Yeah, no. It's just me looking at it and saying, okay, yes, my retirement accounts will support me when I reach, you know, age 59 and a half in the lifestyle I currently have.
What about you, Aaron?
Yeah, I don't think we have a retirement age. We've never actually sat down and talked about, oh, what's retirement going to look like? We're in that, I guess it's a little bit like Miranda's talking about, being able to coast, and a little bit what Chris is talking about, where we're not paying attention to a lot of things. We're just saving money like crazy, and then we're trying to do investments that we think will pay off down the road, and then maybe we'll figure it out later.
And I think that's probably true of most people. I mean, you know, I was just thinking, I just remembered this. I remember thinking when I was in my 20s, probably my early 20s, I was going to retire at 30. I mean, and I bet you we all have this dream, don't we? I mean, I did. And this was when you guys were knee-high to a grasshopper. I had that fantasy, you know, I was going to retire when I was 30. And I knew how much money it was going to take. I was going to have $200,000. And then $100,000 of it, I was going to use, $50,000 I was going to use to buy a sailboat. And $150,000 I was going to use to buy apartments so that would support me and keep pace with inflation for the rest of my life. Now, that sounds ridiculous now, and it was. But you know what? But even now, I was going to... My life has changed as I've gotten older, right? I mean, I'm 67. I don't have a number. I don't have a date. And so it's hard for me to wrap my mind around this whole concept. I mean, I don't know. I think it's important to have an idea before you retire whether you're going to have enough, but I don't know if you can actually aim at a number from years away and then hit that number. And yet that's really the purpose. I mean, actually, let's do this. Let's go into this. How do we make a retirement number, Chris? This is Can I Retire Yet? Is the name of your website. What do we do?
Well, so I think, again, it's really going to be individual for each person or couple or family or however you want to look at it. But I think you need to look at where does your money go? Like, what are you spending? And so you really can't determine the number that determines how much you need until you know that. So that's the starting point, knowing what you're spending now and where those dollars are going. And you could be as specific or as not specific as you want to be with that. But I think the more specific, the better. Because, again, then you have to project that out. Like, is your spending going to change over time? And, you know, like, what things are going to come off the books? Like, once you pay a mortgage, that's coming off the books. Once your kids are done with college, that expense is done. So you don't have to worry about it anymore. And what things are going to go on forever and maybe get more expensive? Like, most likely, we're going to have more healthcare needs as we get older, and our premiums are going to go up because most people need more healthcare needs. So you have to kind of factor all that in. It's not a simple equation. And then I think the one thing I think, especially like even in the FIRE community and people in general don't appreciate and don't think enough about, is just we're going to change. Like, I don't think there is a constant number. So I think it's good to build in some buffer. But it also, you can kind of get trapped where you always need more, more, more. And sometimes I think you made an excellent observation about the FIRE community. Many of us don't actually retire. So I think you can oversave and oversave and oversave to get to this point of retirement. And then you get there and you're still going to do things, because again, people that can get to this point tend to be very productive, I guess, kind of almost type A people, and they're not just going to be able to turn that off. And so again, I think we're going to end up oversaving if you're in this FIRE community and you have this FIRE mindset.
Now, Chris, what about these calculators? I was just reading an article on your website this morning. Uh-huh. And you reviewed 28 or some huge number of calculators, right?
Yeah. So my blogging partner, Derek Kirkpatrick, he was a software engineer, and he actually built his own calculator and he did all the reviews. That's not so much my area of expertise. But yeah, I mean, we affiliate with a few that we've kind of found were amongst the best. And I do think it's helpful. I think what most people have a hard time seeing is how all these factors play together, like your investment returns and inflation and, your spending over time and taxes. A good calculator that looks at like what your taxes will be over time at the federal and state level. And a lot of these things, people are surprised what the results show. So yeah, I think having a good calculator as you get close, especially, is a valuable thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, we got to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to tell you why I think calculators are bullshit. And I want you to refute my argument.
I will, but yeah, I'm happy to dive into that.
we're gonna be right back up. We'll be right back after this, folks. Okay, we are back. Now, here's the problem I have with calculators, and not just retirement calculators, lots of calculators. They require you to know things you can't know. For example, I mean, one of the things you said, Chris, which obviously makes total sense, is to track your expenses so you know how much money you're spending, right? But what you don't know is how much you're going to spend in retirement. Am I going to sit on the back porch, or am I going to tour Europe and stay in 5-star hotels? Am I going to have a little sailboat, or am I going to have a giant yacht? You know, how do you know? You can't know how much money you're going to need. You know, obviously, what they say is you plan on spending 80% of what you spend now. You know, I just read that today in another article. And that makes sense. I mean, you know, you have to start somewhere. But how do you, I mean, there are so many variables, and none of which we know. We don't know how much we're going to spend in retirement, really. We don't know how much medical costs are going to go up. We don't know what we're going to earn. We know what the stock market has paid over the last 100 years, you know, on an average, but we don't know how much we're going to earn. You mentioned taxes before the break. We don't know what taxes are going to do. They could go up, down, or sideways, right? So the amount, and when you have an uncertain world, and then you start plugging the results into a calculator, which is projecting decades into the future, isn't the answer almost unusable?
Yeah, so I'm going to agree with one thing that you said, and I'm going to push back pretty hard on another. So as far as like the usefulness of the calculator, I think what it allows you to do is to do if-then scenarios. So you say, if this happens, then what happens? If this, then what? And it allows you to project these things out. And again, I think we tend to think very linearly and not in a way of compounding. And so to see these things, I think it's very helpful just to see the impact of your decisions and to see what may happen and see what the odds and probabilities are. So from that perspective, I think they're helpful. But where I do agree that the calculator, the outputs are quite BS, is I like to use the analogy of like an airplane. So if I'm taking off from New York City and I'm flying to Philly and I'm just 1 degree off, it's not very far, right? So I may end up very close to the Philadelphia airport. But if I'm flying from New York to LA and I'm off 1 degree, I mean, who knows where I'm going to end up, because that error is going to compound over such a long time. And it's kind of the same thing with a calculator. So I would agree with that point. Where I'm really going to push back hard on you is you're dead right. Like, you don't know how much you need, and running out of money is a absolute risk, but it's not the only risk. So something I'm experiencing in my own personal life right now, I just got back. I was in Pennsylvania for the past 2 weeks. My mom is like traditional retirement age. She just turned 70. She is battling some very serious health issues. She may not make it, like, when I came back, and she's kind of turned around a bit. But she's not living the retirement that she envisioned. And I think, like, a lot of time we use these calculators and we put in like a lifespan of 90 or 100 years, but your odds of living to 100 are somewhere around 1%. But we focus on this risk of running out of money and getting stuck in fear. And again, I think if we could find a more balanced approach to, you know, live the life you want to live now and not put everything off. Because I talk to so many people who say, oh, once I retire, I'm going to travel. Once I retire, I'm going to do this and that. Like, for me, my decision, like, you've asked a lot about my retirement number, but my decision to leave my job was really a timing decision. My daughter was starting kindergarten. Like I said, we were from Pennsylvania. We wanted to move west, and we knew it was going to be harder once she started school. So we wanted to kind of pursue the life we wanted to pursue. We wanted to live in the outdoors. We wanted to live in a more positive community, which I think we have here, than what we had in Pennsylvania. So for a lot of reasons, we moved, and the number was kind of a pretty small part of that decision, to be honest.
Well, first and foremost, Chris, let me give you my most sincere wish for your mother's rapid recovery.
I hate to hear stuff like that, especially because I'm 67.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, things can happen fast.
Things can happen. And also, by the way, I want to commit you on your answer about the calculators too, because the truth is that while calculators may not be the be-all and end-all, they can't be, they do give you an idea of where you are, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think maybe relying on a calculator too much may be a mistake, but certainly one can never fault someone for making an attempt to guess things like how long they're going to live and how much they're going to need in retirement, obviously.
Yeah, I think it's an Eisenhower quote, something about, you know, planning is, our up plan is worthless, but planning is indispensable. And I think that's really what the calculator does, is just lets you see different scenarios and forces you to think about things. And are you accounting for all these different variables that they're going to force you to enter and maybe you haven't even thought about? So that's where I think the value of a calculator, not so much. Yeah, I agree. Too many people like look at that. Am I going to be successful or not? And they put too much stock in that. And that's probably not a good use of the calculator.
Yeah, well said. Now, another thing too, this is what I've come to believe in my own life, because I've done this for 40 years, giving people advice like this, you know, like we're doing right now. And you know what the conclusion I've arrived at? Do you know how much money you need before you retire? As much as you can possibly save. I mean, really, it just boils down to that, you know? And hopefully, if you're doing something that provides value in your life that you enjoy doing, you don't retire ever. But you can't have too much. You can waste your life trying to get more, but that's basically what I've, and this is what I do for a living, give people advice like this. But in my own personal life, I'm just saving up as much as I can, you know? I mean, what else is there?
Yeah, and I don't disagree. And again, like we saved and saved and saved to hit this number. Like that's what we were focused on. And then we really, most years since I have quote unquote retired, my wife still works part-time. Like I said, I have these different projects going on. So we're kind of in that kind of that coast mode, like Miranda talked about, where we're really not much spending down and we're not much saving anymore. And we're, so our that FIRE portfolio that we had continues to grow. And so when it does come time, I mean, our withdrawal rate, either we can really expand our lifestyle if we choose to, or our withdrawal rate is going to be so low that we're going to have almost no risk of running out of money. But it's a good place to be, but yeah, it did require, you know, working hard to get here, and I don't have any regrets.
You know, and I totally 100% agree with what you just said too, because where I am today is I don't have to work, because there's almost no way that I can outspend the money that I have. I mean, obviously there's a way to outspend any amount of money, but you know what I mean? And when I achieved that, which wasn't that long ago, really, it's a really, really good feeling. You know, not to have a mortgage and to know that if push came to shove, my wife is much younger than me and she's a nurse practitioner and she loves her job. So she's not going to quit. But it's a nice thing to know that if she did, if this website, my website went to zero, I still live a good life too. And then that's something I think, you know, screw the calculators. That's something to aim at, to know that you can live off the interest or the Social Security or whatever it is and lead the life you want to lead. And that's the goal for me. And it feels damn good when you achieve it, too.
Agree 100% with you on that one. Nothing to add.
So yeah, now, what about you guys, Miranda and Aaron? I've been dominating the conversation, which is not like me.
I mean, I think for me, the biggest thing is that goes back to, like, what are you trying to accomplish? And to a certain degree, I'm like, yes, we definitely want to save. You know, you talk about not being, you know, being impossible to save too much. To a certain degree, though, I think depending on your situation and where you're at, you know, if you get so obsessed with, I have to build up this much or XYZ, and you don't take the time to enjoy life a little bit as you're going along. Like for me personally, I'm just like, okay, then what was the point of all of this?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's always been this balance. Like I'm not one of those people who I've never maxed out a 401k. I mean, I do max out. Like I did max out my Roth IRA back when I qualified to contribute to a Roth. And, you know, I still put some money into a SEP IRA. And I have, you know, my travel fund that I invest in and all of that kind of stuff. But like, I never got, you know, I never decided that, oh, maxing out this retirement account, this 401k or having to max out what I can set aside is my goal, because it's like, oh, you know, what would be enough? What would be enough to help me, you know, how much can I put aside each month for it to be enough? And if I don't max everything out, that's fine because I'm still having a nice life right now. And I want to make sure that I am enjoying my life and living the life I want to live right now.
Interesting. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. I mean, I'm going through Chris's website too. You know, it seems like first off, you're going through a training phase in all of this. And, you know, the first phase of this FIRE movement is one, you got to learn about taxes. You got to learn about, you know, cutting costs and cutting corners and not buying lease cars or new cars and getting Toyota Celicas. And then you got to figure out how to maximize your taxes. Then you got to figure out and learn how to invest properly without blowing a bunch of cash. And you got to figure out how to live without, you know, so that you can reduce your costs. Oh, you also have to, you know, decrease your debt first and foremost before you can start actually accumulating money and houses and all these other things. So it's, there's a huge phase in that first part before you can get to a more comfortable stage, you know, of, you know, oh, I can relax now. I can just get a part-time job because I've got enough money saved up. In our podcast, you can learn a lot about these things and Chris's website and all this stuff, but there's a lot.
There is a lot.
All this.
And you know, I used to be a financial advisor many years ago in another life. And I had clients who, I remember my neighbors, where I lived in Tucson, Arizona, my neighbors were my clients. They were 80 and they had, their TV was broken. They put a portable TV on top of their big console TV after it broke, and they literally sat in lawn chairs, and they had $5 million. And, you know, and this can be a problem. In fact, I've been accused of it myself because I can afford a much bigger house. I drive a 2009 car, and I'm a millionaire several times over. And so but my point is this. You have to be careful not to get sucked in. I mean, if you spend your entire life, which I've done, teaching people how to spend less, you can find yourself not able to spend money. And I hope I'm not in that category, but you have to be careful because you develop a mindset to where saving is really important. And then all of a sudden, there you are, old and not able to enjoy what you've been working your whole life for. And as you just said, Miranda, which is the point. The point is to enjoy your life, not to get a mountain of cash.
And I think that's why looking at this number and taking a step back is so important, because it's not so much about the specific number. It's about really thinking about being deliberate about the choices you make and how you want to proceed with your life. It's less about, okay, I've got to hit a specific number, and more about how does running these numbers or looking at these calculators help me think about what matters to me and what it's going to take to be able to live a life that matters to me.
As usual, Miranda, you're erudite. You know, you're like Yoda. No, you are right, though. And this is a point you made many times on this podcast. You're absolutely right every time you make it, too. You're absolutely right. Now, I have to ask you guys this, though. We're nearing the end of our podcast. We actually haven't... We've all decided we don't really have a retirement number, have we?
She said,
I mean, are we really saying what you want to do is save up enough to be happy, or you know, use a calculator to estimate what you're going to need. But should we have a retirement number, Chris?
Well, I mean, I'm going to throw one more little wrinkle in the conversation here, because I think like we all kind of agree that like retirement itself is not the ultimate goal. And I think that I appreciate that we all kind of have come to that conclusion, and that's certainly where I've landed. But one thing I would say is I think it's worth acknowledging that we don't always choose when we retire. Like, I think like there's this idea that like, oh, I'm going to retire at 70 or I'm going to retire at 40 or whatever. And we have this number in our head. And like the reality is people get hurt. Industries change and people get laid off and jobs go away. You become a caretaker for a parent or for a spouse. And like, so having enough, like knowing that you have enough, there is value there, even if retirement isn't the goal. So that's just one little extra wrinkle that I was going through my head, because I would agree with you guys. I don't think retirement, just for the sake of retirement, is the goal. But knowing that you have enough that, you know, your investments could support you, it's a very comforting place to be. And that is one thing that distinguishes, like, if you are financially independent versus on this path to Coast Fire that we talked about, or any of these other paths, none of them is right or wrong. They all have trade-offs. But that's a huge advantage, I think, of you know, pursuing financial independence quickly and then just still having the option. You don't have to stop working, but you certainly can.
flawlessly said, Chris. I totally 100% agree with you. Anybody have any closing thoughts before we get out of this wonderful podcast?
Honestly, I just want to make sure that we talk about the importance of, and we've talked about this before on this podcast, but just the importance of as you go through this process, taking a step back and really evaluating your values. And as Chris mentioned way back earlier in this, make sure you're checking your spending. And, you know, and I hammer this all the time. I know I sound like a broken record, but check your spending, track that, look at that and say, does this align with my values and what I say I want to happen in my life? Because one of the things that was a huge aha moment for me was when I realized, I was like, why does my life suck? Why don't I ever have enough money to do the things I want to do? And then when I tracked my spending, I went, oh, that's why, because I'm spending money on shit that doesn't matter to me. And I'm not thinking about it. And so I really think making that shift to conscious effort, and the way you consciously look at your money is huge.
That's wonderful advice. That's great advice. It's perfect. Aaron, anything else?
No, I don't have anything other than I really enjoy the idea of coasting.
Yeah, let's coast. Let's do some coasting. How about you, Chris? Any last thoughts?
No, just to echo what Miranda just said. Like, so I wrote a book called Choose FI, Your Blueprint of Financial Independence. And in the book, like, we use this term. So the book was kind of crowdsourced from all these people in the FIRE community. And I don't even know who to credit this to, but I love this term. It's called being a valuist. And it's kind of like, as opposed to being frugal or a minimalist, a valuist just means that you line up your spending with your values. And it stuck with me. And so, like, if that term, I like to throw that out there in all these conversations because I think it sticks with people. And I think that's what we should all aspire to be.
Wonderful. I'm feeling really good about myself right now and my life. I appreciate it. Okay, you guys, we are out of time, folks, but we are never out of topic. Dig a little deeper. You're going to find links to lots more info in our show notes. And remember, if your goal is to make more, to spend less, to retire rich, your online home is moneytalksnews.com. And don't forget to check out Miranda's online home as well. That is Miranda Marquit, MARQUIT.com. And of course, you want to visit Chris at his website, easy to remember, canIretireyet.com. If you've got a question, comment, or a topic you'd like to suggest, please tell us about it. You can email us at hello@moneytalksnews.com. That's hello@moneytalksnews.com. And one final thing, if you like what we do, do something for us. Subscribe to our podcast. Tell your friends, too. It takes you 2 seconds, but it really helps us. So if you like us, show us and subscribe to our podcast. Chris, certainly enjoyed having you with us today. Thanks very much. Hope we see you again. I'm Stacy Johnson.
I'm Miranda Marquit.
I'm Aaron Freeman.
Thanks for hanging out with us, folks. Going to see you right here next time.